and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 14th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me back in the comforts of his own home, but joining me in cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, well, enjoying the comforts of my own home, as it were, in this little heat wave.
It's not even hot yet. Come on.
It's not hot yet. Okay, well, take John's word for it. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's right.
That's all that matters. You know, it's all about me.
Well, no, this week on the show, it's all about Anderson Hernandez of the Chunichi Dragons. We got an interview with him. We're going to discuss Ma Kun's injury, Shohei Ohtani's amazing game, and more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I'm going to give you an option. I have a changeup for you, and I have a fastball for you in terms of the trivia. Which one do you want?
Well, given my swing, I probably need one of those ones that you roll up to the plate.
Different sport.
Okay. Yeah, they have a pejorative name for those.
Yeah, bowling pins.
Yes, but we won't use it because we're politically correct on Sundays when we record.
All right. Well, I'll give you the fastball anyway.
Okay.
Because you wimped out instead of rolling.
No leg bounce to this one. No leg spin to this one.
All right. That sounds like a cricket term, so I'm not even going to go there anyway. All right. So Takayuki Kajitani of the Yokohama Bay Stars the other night had a 5-hit game. And in that game, he came up late with a chance to get the cycle. But he hit a home run.
Right.
He hit a pitch I thought was going to stay in the park and go off the fence, but it went over the fence. So anyway, my question for you is, who is the last player in NPB to hit for the cycle?
Darn. I wouldn't have any clue.
Oh, you're kidding.
Why? I care so little about the cycle that it's almost laughable. I really couldn't give a hoot about the darn thing.
I wouldn't either, but I remember this, and I just figured that you would because of who it is.
I mean, I have memorable I have a favorite cycle story where somebody needed a cycle and they got it because the scorer decided to give him a triple when he advanced from second to third on a throw to throw home.
Yeah, whatever. You're wasting time. Give me an answer.
I don't have a clue.
Really?
I don't have a clue.
Wow.
You tell me, then I'll probably remember.
All right, I'll give you the year. See if you can go from that. 2008. Yeah, that's how long it has been since we've had a cycle out there.
Was Glenn Davis playing here then? I don't have a clue. Who was it?
It was Michihiro Ogasawara.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's why I remembered because of who it was. Because you would never associate him with a triple.
Mm.
Especially playing with the Giants that year. So, all right. Well, I have another one for you in 2 weeks. So it's a changeup, so it should be
easy. I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you'd ask me about, you know, it's like if, I don't know, I came around and asked you a question about runs created totals.
Oh, I don't think it's that. No, it's not that arbitrary. Come on. It's guts.
It's guts. Well, I agree it's guts, but I'm with you on that. But I just, cycles are something I care so little about. I pretty much avoid writing about them.
All right. Well, let's avoid talking about them anymore then, since you're
so. Okay.
That's all right.
Spoil sport.
So, a week ago, I went out to talk to, and that would be a week ago from today to Sunday. We're taping on Sunday evening, and I went out to Tokyo Dome and talked to Anderson Hernandez of the Chunichi Dragons, and he's a first year Dominican import for the team. He played with the Mets, the Pirates, the Nationals, the Indians, the Astros. I don't know. Maybe there were some other teams in there. I stopped counting after a while. He's a switch hitter. He's a guy who's had fewer than like 650 at bats in the big leagues. He only has 107 Ks there, so he made decent contact stateside, so it makes sense that he's not striking out a lot here. But he only has about 6 walks and 173 plate appearances, so he doesn't. He's basically up there hacking away up there, which is typical of some of the Latin players. But he had about as bad a start to his career in Japan, I think, as a player can experience. He went 0 for 18 in April And that's when they shipped him out to the farm. And from what I saw at that time, he was just hard pressed to make contact at that time. He didn't have any timing. He was so off. He looked pathetic. I thought, well, this guy can play defense because I saw him make a play in the preseason, and he caught a ball from I don't think Tanishige was the catcher at the time, but whoever was playing catcher at that time, and caught the ball on a bounce and made a tag at short, and I'm like, well, this guy can play D. I mean, this guy can really pick it, but he wasn't doing anything. And we already talked about the fact that he wasn't walking, so he was swinging, he was taking his cuts, but he straightened everything out, and he's become a steady producer recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. He hit 355 in June and was a candidate for Player of the Month. I think you had him up there as well. So anyway, let's go ahead and take a listen to what the player had to say. All right, we're here with Andy Hernandez of the Chunichi Dragons. Thank you very much for taking your time today.
Thank you, man.
All right, now, you started slow at the beginning of the season. What changed for you? Because you went down to the farm and you came back up.
Yeah, just I feel like I never see a pitcher before. You know, like they do so many stuff when they're pitching, like so many moves. They throw a lot of splitting off pitch. But I just has the work on my timing, and I go down and work on that. When I come back, they give me a chance, and here I am. Try to do my best now.
Yeah, I noticed your timing was much better when you came back up. You just got used to the motions, or did they give you some secret?
Yeah, I just got used to the motion. I mean, we had to wait for the pitch. I used to 95 miles an hour pitch, and then they just get the level up and go back to the play, you know. Mm-hmm. And here they do a lot of movement, and so I have to wait, okay, throw it. You know, like I don't do that at the beginning. I just when I saw they give the layup, I just jump right away. That's why I get a lot of ground ball to second base and first base.
Right.
And fly balls.
Now, how was playing on the farm? Because I know that's a little stadium out there, and it's pretty warm even in that time of year.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. I mean, I work a lot there. I mean, we had to go early, practice, game. After the game, I just hit a lot, like, no lie to you, like 300 balls every day. So, you know, right and left.
Right
so,
and left.
Yeah, because remember, they put me here only right-handed. So I tell them, I mean, I know I can hit right-handed, but I know I can hit left-handed. So I tell them, and they say, okay. So I start working again, and now I'm doing good.
Yeah, hitting hard from both sides. All right, now, you're a switch hitter. Which side do you have more power from?
Right-handed.
Right-handed, you have more power.
Yeah, I got more power right-handed, but, you know, I got more contact, less side. So.
So which side do you like better?
Left. Yeah. I start hitting left side when I signed 2001, but I feel better, you know. I feel better left side, hitting left side at the play.
Okay. Now, this team is young, and it's your first year here. So how has, maybe the same question as Wayne Grassick asked you, but how has Hector Luna helped you?
Yeah, he helped me a lot. He was here last year. He know the pitchers. He you know, like, and he tell me about the movement, about all the stuff they throwing. And, you know, I just start getting it. When I go down, I just work on that, on my timing, and thanks God, I get it.
Yeah, and I think the only usually for the All-Star they get a lot of players, but I can't believe Hector Luna is not an All-Star this year. How did you feel about that?
That's weird because he 340. He got
340.
Yeah, 340. So if you don't make the All-Star game with 340, wow. I mean this. I got no word with that.
What did he say?
He said, well, he don't even got word for that because I asked him and he said, well, they don't vote for me. What can I do? You know,
right.
that's weird.
All right. Now, is this your first time under a player manager?
Yeah.
What's it like?
That's all right. He knows players, you know, he because he's a player and he knows how we feel, he knows how to think about the players, and he can make a good move. It's good. Feel good.
Now, what do you think? Is it difficult when you're on the field if you make a mistake? Do you look at him first, or do you look at Morty, the coach?
Well, I really don't. You know, like, let's say when I make an error, I just try to get another ground ball, try to turn the double play. You know, like, I don't just look at nobody. I just want to do the next ground ball to make the play.
Now, does Tanishige, does he dress with the players, or does he dress with the coaches?
Some plays, yes. Some plays, no. You know, like, some plays he own office, like a manager.
Right.
Yeah, some plays, I don't know, they got no office, so he dress with us.
And, I mean, is it strange, or is it okay, or do you try not to think about the fact that he's the manager?
I don't really care. I mean, you know, like, he's the manager, he's a player. What can I do? I mean, yeah, I just try to do my job there and try to be good for the team. I mean, when you do your job, nobody care what happens, you know?
Right. Now, this team has had a lot of different players coming up, and some guys have gotten injured, but there's a lot of young players now. So how do you assess the defense of the Dragons right now?
We got pretty good defense. I mean, Tani is a pretty good player, and he plays second base every day. I play Choa, Luna. You know, like, I think we got decent infield. Wada, good there.
Yeah.
Oshima. So I think we got pretty good defense.
Yeah. Some of these players, do you think they're going to develop? I'm curious. Do you think because they're young and fast that, and you're playing shortstop, that they're after your job?
Well, maybe. I don't think about that. I just try to do my job every day. Try to get hit every day. So I can. They got no excuse. They have to put me there. You know,
right.
Like, I have to do my job every day, and don't give them excuse for sitting me down.
Who's the best of these young players?
Wow, I think Dano is pretty good.
Dano,
he's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, now he's in a slump, you know, like,
yeah.
Everybody got a slump, but he pretty good. He can hit, and he got pretty good defense.
Yeah. I see him. All right, with all the change and the players coming in and out and all that stuff, and you guys are still fairly young, but you also have some veterans, including the manager, the catcher skipper. Can you guys make the playoffs?
It's a little far from now. I mean, it's a lot of games left. We just try to get it day by day, you know, like try to win some games. And we see what happened when October came. But we try to win the most game we can.
You guys have been playing fairly well now, and you did well in Interleague. So what's the key going forward? Is it pitching? Is it defense? Is it trying to score runs in that big stadium?
Well, everything combined. I mean, we start hitting like crazy. Pitchers do their job, you know, like they keep like 2-3 runs a month, and the defense was good. I mean, like, you can ask more than that. When you pitch and defense, rank game, you know, like you make some wrong, so we win the game.
Okay. All right. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, senor.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Anderson Hernandez.
Yeah, thanks a bunch, Andy. I said, what should I call you? He said, Andy's fine. And I'm like, well, all right. But here's another guy I actually did run into him. I think I told you the story that when I did go to Nagoya mm-hmm. earlier this year to talk to Lasting's Millage of the Swallows, mm-hmm. that I was in a restaurant the night before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that I met Hernandez, but he didn't know me from another person. But he said hi, you know, he was really nice, and he was there with his wife and child, and you know, I did meet him, but this was the first time we actually were doing an interview mm-hmm. situation. So anyway, we talked about a lot of things. What was the thing that stood out for you?
Well, it reminded me of something that Barry Larkin told me just a little over a year ago, when he was trying to deal with Hideo Nomo.
Mm.
He said, basically, you know, you got to, you know, to borrow a economics term, you know, you got to swing at the steak and not at the sizzle. he said, basically, he spent a couple of games trying to figure out Nomo, and he realized that he was getting distracted by the tornado movement. And he said basically he learned out where he was, his release point was, and he would sort of avert his eyes from all the gyrations, which sounds like it could be something else. He was trying to avert his eyes from that so he could just focus on the release point.
Right, right.
And pick up the ball. And he said after that, he didn't have any problem.
Well,
but, you know, it is so hard when you come and everybody's, you know, everybody's got little hinks and kinks and dinks and donks and in their deliveries.
Yeah, we talked about that after we finished taping, and I said, well, yeah, these guys were supposed to have stopped this double clutch motion, but we got guys out there doing leg kicks like Michael Jackson, and and it's hard. And he said it was really just hard to wait, and that's what he's been doing is waiting. But yeah.
Yeah, that's happened to a lot. That happened last spring to Niger Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to a lot of guys because, you know, in addition to, you know, the pitching backwards stuff, that's another thing that, you know, of course it makes the Japanese pitchers, the first time you see a guy in the majors, it tends to make him a bit of a challenge just because his timings, you have to time him a little differently.
Exactly, yeah.
So, anyway, so I was thinking about that, and that's quite a challenge. And, you know, so he got sent down to work on the farm, and then I'm going to keep bringing up things other people told me as opposed to real knowledge that I found out.
We all get knowledge from other people.
Well,
you're not the only one.
Well, it reminded me of Vladimir Balentin last year when he had, I guess it was a hamstring injury. Was it a hamstring that he picked up in the WBC, and he was basically missed the first 12 games of the season, and he spent every day on the farm team taking a zillion swings. And he said, you know, being on the farm team is great because you can really, if you got issues with your mechanics or anything, you just iron them out because you're going to get a lot of swings.
Mm-hmm.
So although I don't know about Nagoya Stadium, it's a little park. Have they changed the dimensions again?
I don't think so.
Okay, so because, well, I'm going to say this is really ancient history, but when Kenjiro Kawasaki was a free agent,
and
I went down to interview him at Nagoya Stadium, and they had carved the outfield seats out so that the dimensions are the same as Nagoya Dome.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if they changed them back to be, you know, cozy confines, since I don't, you know, they don't really need outfield seats to their minor league games.
They don't really need infield seats to them, but yeah.
Well, yeah, they, but anyway, so yeah, that's a fairly spacious park, and I saw that I got there in time for some of the Dragons pitchers trying to hit it out of the park. They're taking batting practice.
Yeah, since they can.
So anyway, yeah, so that was, yeah, that's what I was thinking about working on the farm. And, yeah, he does have things sorted out because he was barely playing. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking for, you know, every month I scan the players of the month. I scan their performances, their numbers.
Right.
For the month. And I'm going, Anderson Hernandez, this is the guy who couldn't hit.
Yeah. Nothing.
He was one of the guys who noticeably couldn't hit early in the season, and here he is banging away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I thought so too. I also thought it was interesting that he said, you know, 300, he said he got 300 swings in, and I thought, geez, that would wear anybody out. And these guys always talk about the home run derby stateside and taking a bunch of swings and how much that wears you up, but 300, That's a monstrous number. There.
Yeah, yeah. He sounded like he didn't want to get in trouble for giving away an industrial secret there.
Right.
Swings. Don't tell anybody. But that's what we do. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that would be an industrial secret. But and if the Dragons win the pennant, it'll be they won the pennant because on the minor league the guys were taking 300 swings a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah, that helps. Well. Yeah, it helps. It helps.
Explains their ice bill.
Yeah. But, you know, I didn't know how well he could speak English. I did bump into him, like I was telling you, and I spoke with him, but I wasn't quite sure. So I kind of made the questions easy. But as we were going on and he answered them, I kind of, it came to me to ask that question about the skipper and where he gets dressed, because I thought that would I thought that would be interesting. And it's weird because it's strange to find out that sometimes he's standing next to the other guys and getting dressed, and other times he's got his own spot. Obviously, at home he can dress wherever, but on the road, I mean, obviously in Nagoya Dome he's got his own office. He can dress there.
Right. Right.
But on the road, they all treat it as road players. So either he's gonna go in the office if he feels more comfortable, or dress alongside with the player. I thought that was interesting. And the other thing is, he said obviously, with him as a player, that the communication seems really good. Mm. And I would find that kind of odd, because Shige he never seems to be that kind of guy who's often communicating in a two-way street kind of a way. He just seems one way to me. Like, he's yelling at the pitchers, and this is before he even became manager this year. He's yelling at the pitchers. He's barking at players on the infield to do this and that. And it didn't ever occur to me that his communication skills would be good, but it sounds like they communicated well, because as he said, he told him he could hit from the right side and to let him hit from the right side, and they listened. Normally they just say, yeah, whatever, kid.
Yeah, take that back to the States and let somebody else hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I thought that was actually quite interesting. You know, again, it is what it is. You can't do anything about it, so why worry about whether the guy's a player manager or not?
Yeah, you know, I thought that was an interesting response to it. You know, what can I do? He's a guy. And I also like the response that I didn't necessarily mean when he made an error, where does he look, but if he just makes a mistake, because sometimes guys miss signs. You could be at the plate and miss a sign.
Sure.
Or something. You could be out of position. And he said he knows what the pitches are. And that's another thing I asked him, you know, do you know what the pitch is on every particular pitch? And he said, yeah. I said, well, then does the skipper call the pitches from the dugout when he's not in the game? He said, I don't know. And I'm like, what? He said, I watched the catcher. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's all related. You can get the sign from the dugout if you wanted to, is what I was thinking, but I didn't say anything.
I hear that. I mean, that's just one more thing he doesn't have to worry about.
Right. But to say he looks down, he didn't say he looked down, but he said, I don't look at anybody, you know, I just try to get the next ground ball and get a double play and get off the field. But I'm like,
indeed.
You know, don't look at the manager, don't look at the catcher, and don't look in the dugout.
Don't be mean. Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. I mean, being in the middle infielder is really hard. I think next to being a catcher, it's really, really hard mentally.
Yeah.
And to keep track of everything, where everybody is, where the ball is, where the runners are, what the pitch is going to be, what the batter's likely to do. That's a tough job. You gotta be a smart cookie, which is why most of the really best shortstops, guys like Shinya Miyamoto, are probably more noted for their brains than their baseball skills.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about brains and talk about the catcher skipper. Obviously he's a rookie skipper, and he's got some youth on that team, and he's got some veterans. I'm kind of surprised that they are where they are. In terms of, I guess they're one game under 500, and they had a really good stretch there for a little while, and they played well in the interleague. But I still see him struggling to make decisions. In some games, I think he doesn't hit for himself when he really should, because, you know, anytime you've got a 160-something hitter late in the game, I think you want to hit for that guy. I mean, I think he wants to stay in and call pitches and control the game that way. But if anybody else was a 160-something hitter, he wouldn't have the audacity to leave them in the game. He'd pull them out for a pinch hitter, and he doesn't do that for himself. And I think he's slow on the trigger to pull out some of the veteran players as well. When there was a case in point last week, he probably should have run for Kazuhiro Wada in a game at Tokyo Dome, and he didn't. And, you know, Wada ended up getting thrown out at the plate. Now, I think anybody would have been thrown out at the plate, because it was a single. There was a hard single to left with the Giants playing in the outfield. I think it would have been hard for anybody. But I also think with two outs, a runner actually sent in there just to run would have made it a closer play, a tougher play, and put pressure on the outfielder to make the throw. And that's when guys make mistakes. So just things like that. And I know it's a tight game, but, you know, he just seems to be reluctant to take some of the veterans out. And I understand it, but it's a growing process, I think, for the whole team, a learning process for the team, himself included. And I guess when I asked Hernandez about them making the playoffs, and he kind of hesitated, you know, he kind of said, I don't know about that. It was that kind of attitude, because he knows that they have such young players, they have a young skipper, and it's just, he said, everything combined, you know, we need pitching, we need the hitting, we need the defense, and I don't know, I found it very interesting that he went that path. Most guys, they come back and say, yeah, I think we have enough time to make a run, and we need to do this and that. He didn't give the typical answer, that's for sure.
No, yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was saying, well, I mean, he did in one sense. He says it's a little early to be, you know, either counting us in or ruling us out. So I got that. I guess what I got out of his answer was that, you know, if we pitch the ball and we catch the ball, we should be able to score enough runs.
Right.
So I think that's – well, of course, that's the Dragons formula. And the problem with the Dragons formula is it really works – actually, to be honest, the Dragons formula is catch the ball. And number one, catch the ball. And number two, keep guys who are healthy enough to throw the ball. Because generally in Nagoya Dome, their pitching has never really been all that great. It's usually been about league average quality, but playing in a great pitcher's park with a great defense behind it, you know, they typically, for many years under Hiromitsu Ochiai, they led the league in ERA every year. But they weren't usually the best pitching team in the league, but they were almost always the best fielding team and one of the better hitting teams.
Right, right.
Which was not always obvious. I mean, you had guys, their best hitter in the 80s was probably, I would think, throughout the decade. Excuse the 80s. Boy, am I.
I was going to say the 80s.
Back to the future, baby.
The 90s is what you mean.
No, I'm talking about the
decade,
the zeros. The zeros. The aughts.
Okay.
Okay.
And who was the best hitter?
I would say probably Hirokazu Ibata was the Dragons' best offensive player during that decade. So
I guess I can't.
Tyrone Woods was there for 4 or 5 years, and Fukudome was the best for about 2 years, and there were a couple of people. Morino might have been best 1 year, but I think if you look at that whole span, somebody who was religiously like one of the top 5 or 6 best offensive players in the leagues, Ibata was usually right up there.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So anyway, that was the team, and you that the dome masked their strengths, which were their defense. It didn't mask their defense, but it made their pitching look a lot better and their hitting look a lot worse.
Yeah,
they used to go on the road and kill people with their offense. So okay, now that was interesting, and I thought, you know, talking about the All-Star game is kind of interesting. Of course, we get this everywhere.
Mm.
You know, we get this in the States as well, because although I think, you know, they only – what's the roster size in Japan? 75?
For the two-game series, yeah.
2 games, 3 games, however many they decide to play this year. Well, it's a lot. But the thing is, because they have to – you know, the fans get to vote in a starting pitcher, a middle reliever, and a closer. And they don't – you know, I don't know why they don't get to vote in a designated hitter for the Central League, because – they use a designated hitter.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so Luna got stuck because the Hiroshima Carp fans voted in Shota Dobayashi as the third baseman.
Yeah.
And the players voted in Murata. I think didn't get the. I think he just beat Luna in the vote for the players' vote.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really have space because they got to carry all this extra weight on the roster. They didn't really have space for another third baseman. And that left out the guy who was the third of the – I would go as far as saying he's the best offensive player in the Central League this year.
Yeah, and last year until he got injured.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he was having a – you know, he was blowing away the batting title race. And if he needed about – if he had about 60 or 70 more at-bats, he probably would have won the batting title.
Yeah. Well, these two guys, Luna and Yuhei Oshima, are really carrying the Dragons, and they've really made a difference as to where they are in the standings. So, yeah, it's too bad, but we know it happens. And like you said, they voted in Prince Error Boy Dobayashi, and that's that.
Oh.
So that's that.
Okay.
All right, well, let's talk about the Masahiro Tanaka injury. Thanks again, Andy, and I'll be seeing you next time somewhere out in Tokyo, so appreciate it. Now, Ma-kun, we get this report the other day that, and I came out of nowhere, it was kind of sudden. We didn't hear that, you know, he's hurt and he might miss his next start or anything like that. It was just, you know, or he didn't come out of a game shaking his arm or anything. We just heard it all of a sudden. So obviously I wanted to add that to the show and I sent to you, did you see it coming? And I didn't see anything, you know, you've been looking at more of the starts than I have. So,
well, I saw things happening, but I didn't see an injury happening, but I saw him pushing himself, looking like he was pushing himself to the limits. And one of the things that really caught me during his last start against the Cleveland Indians was everybody after the game saying, oh, he wasn't having troubles with his command. It was troubles with his location. He was making mistakes. Yeah, that was a mistake. And then Nick Swisher came out and said, you know, I was looking for a slider, but I expected it to have some bite on it. I didn't expect it to float up there in the strike zone.
Right.
You know, he threw the two worst, you know, he threw a bunch of bad pitches, some of them because his location was poor, but most of them because the pitches didn't have a lot of movement on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it looked like to me. And I was thinking, now that's weird because basically he's more of a movement guy than a raw velocity guy. And after the game, people said, well, okay. Well, anyway, so did I see anything in the start before? No. Did I see anything in that start? Yes. And what I saw was a continuation of a pattern where batters had been having, I won't say more success against his splitter and his fastball, but they'd been getting better swings against them.
Right.
And I mean, not quantitatively, but, you know, more foul balls on pitches that they would have been missing by 2 inches for strike three in May. You know, they were just getting the end of the bat off and fouling off strike two, running up his pitch counts like, you know,
right?
Geez, like flags on Memorial Day. They were shooting up there. So he was really struggling and you know, struggling to get six innings in because of his pitch counts.
Yeah.
So anyway, did I notice anything? No, I didn't. I saw that, but I didn't think too much of it. And then,
Who would? Yeah, I don't think anyone really would. But
and then the interesting thing was Jason Koskrie of the Japan Times tweeted somebody's comment that his velocity was fine in the last game, and indeed it was. And okay, here's the thing: I looked at Brooks Baseball Net, where they store and organize all this pitch FX data.
Mm-hmm.
And not only was his velocity fine, but here's the thing. His release velocity was higher in his last start than it had been all season. He was throwing, you know, he's not getting the action on his pitches, but he's throwing harder.
Right, he's getting more.
He's putting more effort into
each pitch, yeah.
And yeah. I'm guessing he's trying to make some adjustments to this. I'm saying I don't know what. But the other thing I did notice was that while his velocity has remained constant over the course of the season, what hasn't remained constant is the gap, the vertical gap between his splitter and his fastballs. And there are, I think, two things here. Is one, some of that, condition here, some of that may be caused by the fact that he may be throwing more. He has a flatter two-seam pitch.
Mm-hmm.
He has a flatter split-fingered fastball that he throws for strikes low in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that he may have been throwing more. He needs to throw that more to keep guys honest, keep them, you know, chasing the one that he buries for strike three, for a swinging strike three.
Right. Yeah. They have to believe it's going to be a strike. Yeah.
Right. So he's got to throw a few more of those, and that would cause the vertical distance between his four-seam fastball. But his four-seam fastball is losing some of the horizontal movement it had, some of the, you know, what keeps it up.
Right.
Some of the, it doesn't really hop, but it loses, we'll say, you know, we know it doesn't hop, but we'll use the standard baseball term, it's losing some of its hop that it had early in the season when people were saying, oh, it does have some.
Yeah.
And so that gap is getting smaller and smaller. Now, whether that's – and that sounds like it would be easier to hit, and it looks like they were getting better swings, and so that's all I know.
Right. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I feel for him. I mean, I would imagine that he had some pain, and he's a prideful guy, and he signed this huge contract, so he was probably thinking, well, it's a little bit of discomfort, but maybe it's because I'm working more than I was working that last season in Japan, where every chance he got, he tried to pitch on short rest here. So, and a lot of the talks were that teams were adjusting, and the second time around they were getting used to him, and now he's not as deceptive as a Nomo, or he's not as hard a thrower as Hideki Irabu was, so he's got to hit his spots. I mean, it's not like he's got some big deception thing going on out there, so... You know, maybe pitching on shorter rest and all that stuff is probably, you know, people brought up the last season when he pitched in Game 6 of the Japan Series and threw 160 pitches and came back the next night with 15 to close out a game. And, you know, all those things are coming back up. But remember, he was checked out. He had medical exams in L.A. when he sat down to do these interviews with these teams, and everybody cleared him. So this is not something that, you know, obviously anybody could predict. And I keep wondering why there are so many more elbow injuries with U.S. pitchers than there are out here in Japan, when we know that they drive these guys brutally through their younger years and all the way up to obviously the pros, and make them throw so many pitches. And
well, I think more of the guys in Japan wash out before they get to be pros.
Well, yeah, but once they get there, it's not that they can't handle the workload anymore. They're used to the workload because they're pros. But
here's
the thing I wanted to get to is, one guy told me Japanese pitchers use their legs really well. Better, more so, not maybe more so, but better. They're better at using their legs in general than some of the U.S. pitchers. And another thing, I did an article for at work yesterday, and a former, I think he pitched with the Swallows first and then the Giants, was Yoshitaka Katori?
A Giants and a Sabre Lions.
Sabre Lions.
He's a columnist with Yomiuri.
Yeah. Right. And he wrote that and this is something I thought about too, and I was talking to another a colleague at the office, and they said, well, maybe it's the ball. And indeed, Katori wrote that the ball is a little bit heavier in the States, and it's actually a little bit larger in size, just slightly larger, but a little bit larger in size, and he said it's heavier. So you combine that with the workload, maybe that's what the problem is. And that the other thing is that, you know, Japan, they have guys pitching once a week. Maybe that's the right timing for guys to come back pitching once a week. Maybe Japan has those things right.
Maybe. However, pitching once a week, we still get guys with multiple Tommy John surgeries here.
Well, obviously, if you're going to throw a ball, you're going to get injured.
Sure. Now,
but the ratio is very different. Yeah, the ratio seems to be a lot fewer guys out here end up with the Tommy John surgery.
Right. Now, I'm going to mention a study, and I'm going to mention it just in passing because I don't have the stuff. I ought to post it on the website, but there was a very interesting study that was reported on, I was going to say Fangraphs, or it was either Fangraphs or Baseball Prospectus. There's a guy in Baseball Prospectus who does a great deal of summarizing research into pitching injuries.
Right.
And basically, this particular study stated the conclusion, I should say, or the summary of the research was that in America, pitchers coming out of leagues where there are legal limits on pitcher use in high school are less likely to have Tommy John surgery as professionals.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, now, these guys' arms are getting checked out. And I have to think that you used a, I think, the perfect phrase for this. They were cleared on the MRI.
Mm.
Their MRIs showed nothing out of the ordinary, which means it doesn't mean their arm is fine. It means their arm shows no visible signs of imminent danger.
Right.
But that doesn't mean those things aren't there. It just means that our ability to detect them is probably limited.
Well, you know, I would like some physicist somewhere, first of all, to do a study about the weight of the ball and how that impacts guys. And, you know, I certainly don't know. I couldn't claim to know why there's a difference. But I would like to see that and then say, hey, look, maybe once a week is the best timing to do it, or maybe fewer innings is the best way to go about it, because there's been such an inordinate amount of Tommy John surgeries in the States, and some people have asked me. They say, well, in fact, I think I saw something on Twitter earlier this season when we had a rash of them in the major leagues. Someone mentioned that we don't have as many in Japan, and then they made a list, and the list had guys from pitchers from the 80s on it. And I'm like, you know, if you got to dig back that far to the 80s then, to get some people on this list. And I think you pointed out that one of the persons on the list was a catcher, or, you know, a non-pitcher.
Well, Kenta Kurihara had was on Tommy John.
So yeah, I mean, obviously something's going on. And I think the United States could learn something from the way Japan does it, to be honest. Obviously, like you said, it's not that we don't have zero. It's just that there are fewer and farther between. And, and a lot of the guys who have gone over to the States, I know two of them. Tsuyoshi Wada had arm trouble, and he had no real history of arm trouble before he went over there. Kyuji Fujikawa did have some problems before he went over there. But those two guys went over there in their first year. They ended up with Tommy John.
So this is Junichi Tozawa also.
Yeah. So
a number of people had. Now Tanaka isn't right now scheduled for Tommy John surgeries. He's scheduled for this platelet-rich plasma therapy, which I was reading was successful with Takashi Saito, his teammate with the Rock 10 Eagles last year. And I'm guessing that those two have had some conversations in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I bet. Well, at Tanikaze on Twitter said, pay now or pay later. The scalpel looms large. And I agree. I think it's just a matter of time. The Yankees are going to try to walk him through this rehab session and get him back so they can try to challenge for playoff spots and all that other stuff. But I think at some point we're looking at Tommy John for him.
Well, I don't know, because I they've said it has been now what the report I saw was that the tear was less than 10%, and they are looking at tears of greater than 20% as mandating surgery. I think the platelet rich plasma injections and therapy is essentially a speeding agent to allow it to heal naturally, and at that point, you know, I don't see it right now as a danger sign. I don't have any feeling or that the Yankees are being disingenuous about it, or they're putting him at risk. Because I think if I had a $155 million investment, I would be very ultra cautious. I think they have been.
Yep.
I think just the situation has been, and I can't say what's caused the industry or the injury. I've put out all the things I know about it, which is not all that much. The movement on his pitches and the fact that he's throwing as hard as ever. And he did throw occasionally. And actually this year he hasn't been really throwing on short rest. He's been throwing pretty much on 5 days rest. He's had 5 or 6 days rest pretty much every start. He's had, I think, 3 starts on 4 days rest.
All right.
They talk about the every 5 days, but that's something Girardi's been very careful to space out his starts.
Right.
And I think criticism of him is unwarranted, I think, given what he knows. We're in a different age than we used to be. So anyway, I think I'm optimistic that this will work, and that when I go to New York in September, I'll see him on the mound.
All right. Well, let's hope so. All right, let's move along and talk about Shohei Ohtani. Now, I got to apologize for bringing him up almost every week, but I really think we're looking at something. We are witnesses to something very special, and he just deserves mention, and I just want to give him some props. This past week, the kid threw a 16-strikeout complete game victory against the Eagles. This was Wednesday,
113 pitches.
113, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah, it was 113, yeah. Now, and I asked you, so I posed some questions. What was the most remarkable thing about it? And then I listed these things out here. The 113 pitches, 16 Ks, including Andrew Jones, came four times. The way he finished off the game with 159 kilometer per hour fastball, and that struck out John Balker to end the game, or the fact that he did it with nearly a 20-minute rain delay, and there was rain, and it's on the road. I mean, what was the most impressive thing for you?
Well, I didn't know. See, I watched it in retrospect. I watched it after you posed the question, so I was watching it on PLTV, and I didn't know about the rain. I was just watching his innings. So I have to leave that out of the equation. The 113 pitches surprised me. I think what I noticed was, I think Masahiro Tanaka said, sent him an email, and he said, look, kid, I'm not going to be using my split-fingered fastball for a while. You want to borrow it? because he had a – it was like I was watching Andrew Jones after he struck out. He's saying, so this is what it's like to face Masahiro Tanaka, because that was the look he had, like, what am I doing up here with a bat? Give me something. I need the side of a bus to hit that thing.
Yeah. It was all impressive.
He had the splitter going early, and then he went to the fastball, and it was a work of art.
Yeah, that's the thing is, for me, you strike out 16 guys, I'm thinking 130 pitches, maybe somewhere up there. So he was really efficient. He was quite amazing. Like you said, he wasn't just throwing fastballs all over the place. He was mixing in some secondary stuff, and he was getting strikes with those. He was getting guys to just look at balls that are nice and juicy and up, breaking right down the middle on a couple of occasions. And you know, obviously he was starting them off with those pitches, and so they just stood there. I'm speechless because I keep getting convinced every time. Every time I see him, like last time we talked about him hitting two home runs in the game, and I say what a stud hitter he is, and then he does something like this, and you think, well, no, wait a second, 16? That tied the club record, right? Two guys had held the club record with 16 strikeouts, and he equals the club record on the mound. So I'm thinking, okay, well, yeah, he's a better pitcher than he is a hitter. But then next time he gets a hit, he's going to do something with the bat again. He's going to hit for the cycle, which you love.
Well, I would love it if he hit it, but
you'd remember that, wouldn't you?
Back to the thing about the cycle is, you know, it's funny. I hate to change gears, but when you mentioned the Kakitani game, it's sort of like he's the reason why. That's the reason why I don't like the cycle. Kajitani. Kakitani is a soccer player for Cerezo Osaka. Kajitani had two. He had a game better than a cycle. You know, he had two home runs.
Yes, he did.
and he's downgraded because one of them didn't. One of them reached the seats.
I'm not downgrading him. It's not me. No. His first five-hit game.
Yeah,
but everyone was disappointed that they didn't get
idea
it.
Of a cycle.
Yeah, the stat.
Okay, so anyway. Otani is like that. It's been I was disappointed that I was disappointed. I understood why he wasn't the pitcher of the month for June, basically because of Norimoto had pitched a bunch more innings and had, you know, he had a 3-1 record instead of a 3-0 record, but darn. And I have to wonder if some of the voters said, well, you know, Otani's only a part-time pitcher. We shouldn't give him the award.
who knows what's going through those minds. But, he's been suffering with these cramps. He's been getting cramps, I think, a lot in at the end of May and parts of June that had been taking him out of games or forcing him out of games. So he didn't have any of that issue late in the game. And like I said, he topped out with his fastest pitch on the last one of the game. So I think we're just really privileged to be seeing a really terrific player do something really special. And I apologize to the non-Fighters fans out there, but I really think this is amazing stuff, and I just wanted to bring it up.
Don't you have to, you know, get on the sort of the, you know, we got the crush on Shohei motif here.
No,
don't you get the feeling that if he goes to the States, aren't you pulling for him to let him do what he's doing here, hit and pitch?
I've been saying that for the whole time. Me?
I know.
Yeah, you don't have
I just figured that it would never happen, so that's why but I would love to see that in the majors.
Yeah, I would.
They'd be eating it up.
Yeah.
Like we are.
Yeah, like we are, like you and I are. All right, a few notes. Daisuke Yamaya of the Chunichi Dragons took his first loss of the season. This was Saturday, and he's 7-1 now, so he will not be challenging Makun's record. We left him out, of course, because he's Daisuke Yamaya. Who would have thunk it? You know, he was undefeated, but geez, whatever. Toshiya Sugiuchi, yeah, I mean, it's Daisuke Yamaya. Toshiya Sugiuchi of the Yomiuri Giants got his 2000th strikeout, and that was also on Saturday night. And he did it in fewer innings than anyone else. And this is not going to be a trivia question because I'm going to give it away right away. Previous record holder was Kazuhisa Ishii. But the reason I didn't like that is because Ishii went from Yakult to the States and had a big gap and then came back. And so they only counted his strikeouts in NPB and said he had the fewest innings. And so I thought that was goofy, but congrats to Sugiuchi. I think that was pretty amazing. Now, that was one thing, probably by the next time we talk to you, I think Shuichi Murata will have hit his 300th home run. He's at 299. So we'll probably be discussing him soon and talk about where his place in history is going to go, because I think he's a really interesting player.
Yeah, he's found himself. I thought it was funny how last year when he hit for average, the story was, oh, he's finally learned how to hit for average. We expect him to hit 330 every year. Like, huh?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
he made some adjustments, and then people have made some adjustments, and he's taken a step forward, which was good, but he ain't a 330 hitter.
No, he's not. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this week we have an MP3. It's from Kozo in Tokyo.
Hi, Jim and John. I was wondering what you'd think would happen to the player landscape if MPB got rid of its import limits. Do you think foreigners would actually overrun Japanese baseball? I don't think it would, although I think it might lead to an increased signing of Taiwanese and Korean players. What do you think would happen?
All right. Excellent. This is why we want questions, because your questions help us. It really drives the show and makes it more interactive, obviously, with you guys asking us some questions. But it brings some great topics to the table, and I love this question. Jim, your thoughts.
Yeah. NPB has always been, I certainly understand, but I think Koz and I talked about this a year and a half ago. You know, it's sort of like, it's always been a bit of a jobs program for Japanese people. So, you know, we've got to keep jobs for Japanese people. So we've got to have baseball jobs. And they, having said this, then they limit the number of professional players to like 900. So right. We're going to keep jobs, but we're not going to give out that many. You know, we do more, but we're not going to. So it's kind of what can I say? Bass ackwards. And should they let in? Yes, absolutely. I think my opinion would be you create more jobs by adding them at the bottom, and you open up more farm and minor league opportunities, and then you bring in all the foreigners you want. You know, if you cut the quota on foreign players, Japanese baseball will get so much better.
Oh, definitely, I agree.
And what it would mean is, but you have to, at the same time, work on more Japanese, you know, more development at the bottom end. But those two things driving the competition would force the level up, which is the key problem in Japanese baseball, is that if you want to keep your best stars, you've got to have the best game. And right now they don't. So they don't.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Koza, I think you're right. I think everything you said is right. But I also see that, you know, putting more separation would put more separation between the haves and the have-nots, meaning the Giants and the Tigers and the Eagles. I think those are the teams that spent, and the Dragons, they spent a lot of money on players. They could go nuts and just bring in more players than, let's say, Hiroshima, which is a low-budget team. But I agree that, like you said, Asian players would have increased opportunities. That makes sense. At the same time, I don't think it would change things right away. I think it would take time. Now, the other thing is there's a phenomenon that we see in the States, and it's that during stretch drives, teams try to go and find players. They identify areas where they can get stronger, and they try to find players to fit that or to fill those gaps. Relief pitching is the first thing that comes to mind for a Japanese team. Maybe some teams would start bringing in more guys in the second half if they think, like, let's say, for instance, Hiroshima or a Hanshin, if they think that those guys can help them get over the edge, even the Chunichi Dragons or something like that. But would some of the low-budget teams do that? I don't know. And what happens in the States is a lot of players get DFA'd this time of year, and those are the guys that are probably going to be available. So you're going to get guys who come from the States and maybe willing and they're available to play on a short-term basis, but it's just like the rental system that the MLB has, where you trade a guy, you know you're only going to have him for the last 2 months of the season, 3 months of the season, but, you know, it's more opportunities for those guys. Now, here's the thing. Just like Jim just said, the playing time that has been guaranteed for X number of Japanese players on the top team, that playing time gets cut, right? Mm-hmm. And if this happens, it knocks down the percentage of the guys who get X number of at-bats on the first team, and like Jim said, it forces those guys to either get better or get left out. So it would take a while, but Japanese baseball would improve because of it, because you've got more competition for jobs.
Well, I think Japanese baseball has gotten better when they increased the limit on foreign players from 2 to 4. Yeah. I think it just made the competition harder.
Yeah, yeah. So, and obviously, some of the guys on the fringe would disappear. But the level would be higher, and you just have to step up the game, and that's what it's all about, is getting better. And I still don't understand why there's such a low number, the figure. I don't think it's a problem putting 6 or 7 guys out there who don't speak Japanese. I still don't think it's a problem because you're rooting for the team. But I think in Japan, I don't think that works, because the fans are rooting for the team, but they're also rooting for their heroes.
Sure, and they market the Japanese guys as heroes until the foreign players have been around long enough to develop a little brand.
Right.
So, but do I want to see it? Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, as far as you said, the fringe guys getting left out, but I would guarantee you that there are fringe guys in Japan who are fringe guys because they're not making the right adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are guys who are – there are fringe guys, and you know I say it every year – there's fringe guys populating the minor leagues who would, if all they need is a shot and a shot at a younger age at the best competition in Japan, to make the adjustments to adjust to the higher level. And these guys would have careers, and they'd take away people's jobs who don't deserve to be playing.
Mm.
So, you know, we need more of that interaction, more of that up and down. Japan's system is still a, you know, a two-tier up first team, second team, with some modifications to that. But the point is, players don't rise through the ranks and face tougher competition as they make adjustments. They just, you know, they dominate the one league, and when they have a chance to play, they use them.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, hopefully, if such a thing would happen, then the corporate leagues become more important, and maybe another farm team or another farm level springs up, because they wouldn't be able to continue to run things the same way. They would have actual players with ability who aren't playing. So that doesn't make sense.
Well, I still think, I mean, it is going in that direction. I have said before, and I believe this to be true, and it's just my opinion, is that the independent minor leagues, every year we see more players drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the independent minors than we did the year before. I mean, it used to be none. The first year they had the independent minors, it was none. The next year there was 2 in the developmental draft, and now it's probably up to 13 or 14.
Yep. Yeah, getting better.
Next year will probably be 20.
Yeah. Excellent question, and I hope we addressed it with at least some compelling answers here. Kozo, we appreciate it. Thank you for the MP3.
Yes.
And anyone else wants to send a question, send it to ykyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll try to get it on the show as soon as possible. We've got another question, but we'll have to hold it off till next week. So,
sorry, Dave. We'll get to you next week. It's a great question, so we're looking forward to that one next time.
All right. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy your baseball.
Don't worry, I will.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.